Well, welcome everyone. Neither of us obviously are Barbara Lyons. Maybe you heard that Barbara is in the hospital. She texted me this morning at 5:39 because I was supposed to pick her up at the airport and said that she's not coming because of, there we go, now I'll come back. She was having chest pains and so she was admitted to the hospital, and so we will certainly keep her in prayer today as well. Speaking of which, why don't we begin with prayer this afternoon? Gracious God, we give you thanks and praise for bringing us together, for the opportunity to serve you and to learn more about you and the gift of life with which you have blessed us. We give you thanks for that life, not only our physical lives, but also our eternal lives that you have secured for us through the work of your Son on the cross for us, and through his death and resurrection. So be with us now. Bless the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts, that they may be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Amen. Okay, so this afternoon we are going to talk about end-of-life issues, and hopefully that's why you're here. Otherwise, keep looking around in the other rooms there to find the right room. But we are going to talk about end-of-life issues. And so as you think about this topic, one of the things that we ask, well, who's the most vulnerable among all of the various populations? Well, right away you naturally would think of the elderly, right? You think of someone who's 110 years old and they've lived a full life, and now what happens from here? Well, there are other populations, though, about which we need to be concerned. And one of those would be people who are sick or dying. And so you would have, there we go. There's a long way between here and there to remote. But you think of people who have cancer, for example, or other ailments. And so we naturally think of the sick and dying. There's also those who are disabled. That all of a sudden introduces a whole new population that we need to think about. And they are absolutely in the crosshairs of this whole conversation about physician-assisted suicide. But then we also have those who are mentally ill. And while you may think, well, that's kind of a stretch, this is happening in other countries, so this is not beyond the realm of possibility. So we need to be thinking about those who are mentally ill as well. A scripture passage that we want to talk about from 2 Corinthians chapter 1. He comforts us whenever we suffer. That is why whenever other people suffer, we are able to comfort them by using the same comfort we have received from God. One of the arguments that people who are in favor of physician-assisted suicide use is, well, we don't want grandma to suffer, so how can you possibly be for making people suffer? Well, have you read the book of Job? Have you thought about Jesus suffering and dying? Have you thought about all of the other instances in the Bible about people suffering? God works through suffering. He draws us closer to him through suffering. Not because he loves to see us suffer, but as a result of the fall, suffering is a part of life. And not only the person who is suffering, but I can't tell you the number of nurses and physicians and other people who have been blessed by ministering to the people who are suffering, or family members who are drawn closer to their loved ones because they were able to help that person in their time of suffering. So we need to be really careful when we talk about suffering is a bad thing. We need to avoid it at all costs. And again, not that we want people to suffer, but it's a part of life, and it's part of the ways in which God works in and through us. Before we go any further into this discussion about physician-assisted suicide, I want to make sure that we have some terms defined correctly. And the first one that I want to talk about is euthanasia. And euthanasia is defined as the intentional killing by act or omission of a dependent human being for his or her alleged benefit. So if you think about your pet who's put to sleep, that's euthanasia. That is a doctor doing something, administering drugs to intentionally kill that person, or in the case of an animal, that animal. And so that's euthanasia. That is not what we're talking about this afternoon yet, although Virginia will talk a little bit about some of the differences and where people have gone with euthanasia and crossed that line from physician-assisted suicide to euthanasia. And then there are some other situations that we want to talk about, and those would be things like pulling the plug, using artificial respirators, and those kinds of things. We're not talking about that today, but I would just give you this general advice that there is absolutely a time when you need to pull the plug, when you are prolonging death rather than prolonging life. And we could easily spend days talking about individual cases in which you have to make that decision. And it is a painful decision, and I don't mean to minimize that, but there's absolutely a place for pulling the plug. Another thing that we aren't really talking about this afternoon would be ceasing nutrition or hydration. That's when you remove the feeding tubes or remove the saline solution from someone. And again, there are instances when this is absolutely the right thing to do because your body has shut down the ability to process the nutrients that are coming in or the water that's coming in. And so you are literally drowning that person because their body just cannot process the water that you're putting in or the nutrients. But then there are also times, and we know about Terry Schiavo, when you are removing that and you are essentially dehydrating that person and causing them to die a very slow, painful death because you've removed all the hydration. And so they aren't able to live after that. So Terry Schiavo would be an instance there. But we're not talking about that. We're trying to keep the focus on assisted suicide. And so Virginia is going to talk a little bit more about that.
We have three things to push and I have two hands. So here we go. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about physician-assisted suicide. Is when, when someone provides an individual with information, guidance, and a means to take their own life. That is a means of assisted suicide. And we hear about physician-assisted suicide. Okay. Is it this one?
Yeah.
Am I going faster than I can do? Okay. Okay, I'm so sorry, folks. It's like, all right, well, let's leave it up there, then we don't have to move it again. So the only difference between what we're talking about is that the difference between assisted suicide and euthanasia is which is the person committing the act. In the case of euthanasia, the doctor is injecting or causing that to happen directly. In a physician-assisted suicide, the doctor is prescribing the medication that then the patient takes themselves or someone else assists them with it, oftentimes a family member or someone of that nature. So there really isn't much difference. They both cause death, and they are both not, as God loves life, how we should be conducting this. We have a story that we're going to share. Some of you may have heard it before, and it's a story about Maggie Carner, who was our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Director of Life Ministries for a number of years, like 12 years. And I'm going to let her tell the story. Things are not working here. There we go.
It's scary, and it knocks the crap out of me. It takes a long time to come to terms with the disease, especially terminal illness. And then you start thinking, okay, this is a new me, this is the new normal, and I can still appreciate every moment. I'm Maggie Carner, and I'm 51. I live in Bristol, Connecticut. I'm married to a wonderful spouse, and I have three beautiful daughters. I was diagnosed last April, about almost a year ago, with aggressive brain cancer. It's called glioblastoma. The first round of treatment was chemo and radiation, and I did really good for a while, and then now the cancer cells have come back, and the tumor is starting to grow again. Here on the mantle, I have kind of my little collection of family pictures. This is my mom on our wedding day. This is my dad, my hero dad. My dad was always very active, and toward the end of his life, he had a spinal cord accident, which made him a quadriplegic. That was a really rough transition for him, and all of us were just heartbroken to think of how is dad going to exist without the use of his arms and legs. Initially, our attention to him and our willingness to be with him all the time, I think it was hard for him because there was nothing he could do in return. But I think he settled into it very gracefully, and he realized the value of the words that were being spoken, and we learned a lot. It was a gift that my dad gave to us because he spent that time with us. I saw with my own two eyes what joy can still be found in just valuing every moment. It doesn't mean it's going to be great, doesn't mean it's going to be romantic, but there are moments that are valuable that need to be cherished. And here I am years later after my father's death, and my siblings and I still talk about those moments. He left us a legacy of that time that he gave us. He could have checked out right away and said, I'm done with this, but he didn't. He stuck around and he said, I'm here for you. And so my dad showed me not just how to live and how to do stuff and how to be productive. He showed me how to die with grace and dignity.
I can't tell you how many times I've watched that movie, and it's difficult to watch it every time. But knowing Maggie, she was just had a heart for the Lord and wanted everybody else to understand the value of life. And so her message, of course, is that we should die with dignity. And if you know anything about Compassion and Choices, the group that is out there to talk us into passing bills for physician-assisted suicide, and probably in the future euthanasia as well, they claim the terms death with dignity. There is no death with dignity in taking your own life, because God loves life. And so, Maggie, of course, worked for LCMS Ministries, and I will say this about her. She was responsible for starting the position of district life coordinator with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And so we have those today. I see one sitting right here, probably more in the room, Pastor Kroonblad from the Minnesota South District. And we appreciate those positions in Lutherans for Life because it gives us the opportunity to have people that work directly with all the pastors in a particular area to help in the communication and getting the word out, even sometimes more quickly than we can at Lutherans for Life. And so we appreciate those positions and others in the other synods who take on that role of being a conduit in their organizations. So as far as euthanasia goes, we have today euthanasia in four countries. I'm going to just go through them. The first is Luxembourg, and nobody knows it's there because nobody knows where it is. So, you know, if you know where it is, then they have euthanasia there. The other one is the Netherlands. Let me get through this. Okay, in the Netherlands, you probably heard that. They do it a lot over there. Then we have Belgium. And I don't know what to say about Belgium other than they are the worst in the world. They have now even passed laws that tell us that you can euthanize children. And they followed through on that a couple of months ago when they euthanized their first child. Now, there are, of course, laws about parents have to approve of this. Good thing this isn't on video with me doing this. Huh? It's just... Okay, thank you. Well, I'm not sure what's happening here. I'm going to keep going. You can click. But there's such pressure on the parents because this has become an acceptable way of life almost that even if there's some objection to it, the parents are generally talked into it. So they did their first one, and we expect there'll be more. And that's a sad commentary. Canada has it. And they did that officially on February 2015 by an action of the Supreme Court of Canada, who did their own form of legislation. Just like we complain when that happens here in our country, when the courts make a decision that becomes law rather than interpreting the law. But they did that in Canada, and as of February 15, 2015, they made it effective within a year, which hit this year in 2016. And we have six countries where there is assisted suicide. The first one is Switzerland. The next one is Germany, Albania, Colombia, Japan, and six states within the United States. And those states are, number one, Oregon. We hear about Oregon all the time. They're the poster child of physician-assisted suicide. Came up with the whole issue of Brittany Maynard, if you remember her. The young lady that had brain tumor, and as ironic as it would be, she had the very same brain tumor that Maggie Carner had. And Maggie wrote to her, she tried to communicate with her when they were both going through this at the same time, trying to convince her to not take her own life, that there were things to do in life. And I think the concept here is that if you take your own life prematurely, what are you missing? I loved it when Maggie said that my doctor said, I'm not going to give you a timeline, on purpose, so that you can go and enjoy your life. You miss baptisms, you miss confirmations, you miss birthdays, you miss weddings, you miss family events. Maggie lived a year and a half after she got the diagnosis. So why would you do it prematurely? Okay, Oregon. Washington is very similar to Oregon. And what I forgot to mention about Oregon, because it's been accepted there so clearly, they actually have a statistic that's pretty scary. They have a 49% increase over the national average of suicide in that state. That is not just physician-assisted suicide. That's suicide in general. Because if you have a problem in life in Oregon, it's an acceptable thing. Go kill yourself. You don't need a bottle of pills to kill yourself. So one would say, then, why do we need the law? It is what it is. Montana also, they don't have a law. They had a court mandate by one judge, but it really technically isn't an official law in Canada. Montana. But it was challenged, and there are some issues in Montana as well with not protecting doctors if they ever did it. So there's, I know that the legislature has, there's been people that have been trying to bring that to write some law that protects the doctors, and it hasn't managed to pass. So there is hope. There is hope. New Mexico has it in one county. And again, because of pressure, I think, within the state or just not being accepted, there hasn't been, that hasn't been utilized in New Mexico. Vermont is the next one that has it. And of course, the most recent is California, which we all heard about because of the Brittany Maynard case again, because she lived in California, moved to Oregon in order to take her life. That came into effect in October of 15. Minnesota, those of you that are from Minnesota, and if you're not, you may want to know what's going on here. We had a law that was in the in a Senate hearing for the Minnesota State Senate of the Health, Human Services, and Housing back in on March 23rd. And we have a coalition going on here in Minnesota, and we managed to hear that this was going to happen. And a lot of folks then were contacted and spoke at that hearing. I see Reverend Hinz back here. He testified at that hearing. A lot of doctors, nurses, very ill people testified for both sides. Kind of sad to see all these folks going up front asking someone to take their life. But it was just a blessing to see folks going to the front that have a terminal illness that asked to be protected by not passing a law like this because they are vulnerable for a number of reasons. And after the hearing, the senator that proposed the bill actually withdrew the bill that day. Now, she didn't withdraw it permanently because she promised us it would be back. She basically told us we weren't educated enough on what it really meant, and that after some time in doing that, it will come back again. So we fully expect it to reappear this next year. So what's wrong with the bill? I'm just going to share a few things. And whether it be this bill or any bill, the issue is there are flaws, and if they try to fix the flaws, it's still assisted suicide. It's killing and taking a life, and that makes it wrong, no matter what these flaws are. But these flaws are significant to take note. First of all, it opens the door to many types of abuse and doctor shopping. So if your doctor, and by the way, I saw my doctor a couple weeks ago, and I asked him, I want to know your position on this. It was really made me feel good because he gave me a whole litany of things he didn't like about the bill. He knew more than I did, to be honest with you. I was kind of surprised by that because I work with this a lot. So I feel comfortable in going to that doctor. I would suggest you ask your doctor. This ever comes about and you're in a position where your physician is going to either prescribe or participate, see what his position is. I don't want to go to a doctor that believes that this is an okay thing. No witness is required at the time of death, so you know there's no way to know if foul play took place or anything of that sort, because once those lethal drugs are in someone's possession, what can happen with them? We don't know. No safeguards. Again, there I said there's no paper trail. After the paperwork for the death certificate generally says, or it does say, the cause of the illness, which is cancer, you know, whatever it may have been, it doesn't say physician-assisted suicide, which is really what killed you. And after 2 years, also that paperwork is destroyed. I don't know why it has to be. My doctor keeps things longer than 2 years. I can go back many years, not that I want to, but the paperwork is destroyed for, you know, whatever reason. And there's no required psychiatric evaluation unless the doctor requests one. But if you did the doctor shopping, they don't know you. So if they don't know you, how are they going to know if you're depressed? And people, this is an interesting thing. One of the most given reasons why people want this bill to pass is because they don't want to be a burden to their family. That really puts the elderly at risk, because they don't want to be a burden to their family, so they could easily be talked into by a child or a family member or friends or whoever. You don't want to be a burden. Let's go get that bottle of pills. By the way, you have to swallow 90 of them to die. It isn't just a pill you take. And oftentimes for the elderly, because that would be hard for them, they'll put them in some juice or something, or they'll put it in a dish of pudding and they'll eat it. And it's just not as simple as people might think. They did the study in Oregon and Washington, and 40% of the victims that were asking for the medication gave this reason: I don't want to be a burden. 61% in Washington said that very thing. So when people say it's about suffering, it isn't necessarily about suffering that people want this to happen. And suffering and depressed people deserve treatment and care rather than killing them. Okay.
One of the other factors that plays into this that Maggie Carner talks about in another video is when this option is available, she said there is this undue pressure on the person who's suffering, thinking that, well, there is this option. Maybe I'm being selfish by wanting to live. And maybe it really would be best for my family if I took my life and end their suffering. She just was very, just really wanted to caution people against jumping into this because of this pressure that would be put on the victim of the disease. So a couple of graphs to show you, just to kind of show you how our society has changed over the years. This question was asked basically over time: if physician-assisted suicide was available, would you avail yourself of this? And you can see it goes all the way back to 1947, when 54% of the population said, no, we wouldn't do that. And now, the most recent statistic here is 2006, and I suspect strongly that it's probably increased since then, but 69% of the population who were asked this question in 2006 said, yes, we would avail ourselves of physician-assisted suicide. But the key is how you ask the question, and that's this next slide, if I can get it to advance. There we go. So the dark green line is, would you avail yourself of physician-assisted suicide if it would, and they ask the question, if it was to end the patient's life in some painless means? Well, who wouldn't opt for a painless death, right? You know, who wants someone to suffer kicking and screaming all the way up until the instant that they die? But, and then the green line is when they phrased the question that it was, they were asked the patient to commit suicide. They actually used the word. Well, no one's...
The light green,
I'm sorry. When you use that word, there's the stigma attached to suicide. And so a far lesser percentage of people said that they would go along with that. We just, at the Minnesota State Fair, a couple months ago, they asked this question, and it was posed by a group that was supported by Compassion and Choices. And so they asked, if you were terminally ill and you were suffering, would you want some way to painlessly end your life? And like 2/3 of the people said, well, of course I would. But it's all in how you ask the question. And so when these things hit your state, and it will. I'm from Iowa, and we had it come up to a legislative committee, and it was, sorry to use the pun, but it died in committee. It's going to keep coming back, and they're just going to keep on pushing this. Compassion and Choices has millions of dollars from, you know, Hollywood folks, as you heard last night. Hollywood folks, and George Soros is funding it, and there's all sorts of people who are funding Compassion and Choices, which, if you recall, used to be called the Hemlock Society. So, kind of close that loop. So they have the money to keep doing the lobbying, and so it will come your way. So be aware when it does come your way. Here's one last graph. I'm a numbers geek, so excuse me, but this is the number of prescriptions in Oregon, the number of prescriptions that were written for the drugs that are used in physician-assisted suicide. And as you can see, it's growing exponentially. The real death, or the real mystery here, is that the green bar there, the number of actual deaths. As Virginia said, it's never recorded on the death certificate that it was a death because of physician-assisted suicide. It was a death because of the glioblastoma or some other type of cancer or whatever the original diagnosis was. So it's really hard to know, and doctors don't want it to be known. So you need to be careful in how you interpret these statistics. And we will continue with Virginia.
So we talk about the value of life from a world's perspective. First of all, the world has a focus on the quality of life. That is the measurement in the world today. So if you're in a wheelchair, you don't have a quality of life as well as someone else. Well, that's just not true. Everyone is a child of God, and everyone has a purpose in this world. And so the world says if you have a diminished quality of life with diminished bodily and mental functions, that would lead to the world removing the burden, which is what's happening in other countries right now. And it certainly is a mentality that's starting to grow in this country. And so we need to be aware of that, and we need to speak out about it. Lutherans for Life is not a political organization, but we have a right to speak when we see something is wrong. And you do too. So we're Voices for Life, you are Voices for Life, and we want you to speak to your legislators and other people that are in a place to do something about this. And from God's perspective, life is valued, and it's just a simple message and so easy. God created life. If he didn't love it, why would he have created it? He also redeemed it when he sent Jesus to die for our sins when we condemned ourselves. He sent Jesus to free us from that. He loves life. And finally, through the waters of baptism, he's promised us, he's called us into an eternal relationship with him. And so I refer to John 10:10, which is a verse I like to use. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. And those words are so powerful. And so we don't want to lose hope, because this is statistics that Barbara Lyons shares with us all the time, so I'm going to share them with you. Since the beginning of 2016, assisted suicide bill initiatives have already been defeated in Arizona, Colorado, Hawaii, Iowa, Maryland, Nebraska, New Jersey, and Utah. Now, some of these are already surfacing again. So the people that want this, they're not going to give up, just as we shouldn't give up. And so you've probably heard there's things going on in Colorado again, there's activity. But the fact that they already got defeated, whether that was in a hearing, in the legislature, whether it went to a vote, in any case, it got defeated. So other states like Minnesota had bills withdrawn, and it never made it to the floor of the legislature. What a blessing that is to have legislators who understand the value of life and will support that in their work for us. They work for us. So let's be sure that they're doing that by making them accountable. I'm going to talk a little bit about assisted suicide is not real care. We have a coalition in Minnesota, and you're soon to hear a lot more about it than what you're going to hear from me today. But it's a group called Minnesota Alliance for Ethical Health Care. And we have a group of wonderful faith-based groups involved with this, including people that we've made friends with in the Catholic Church, in the Presbyterian Church, in the Baptist Church, and other Lutheran churches across the country, across our country in Minnesota. There is such an important need to get together on this issue. These are not issues of fellowship. These are not issues of how we stand in each of our synodical organizations, our individual churches. It's about God loves life. And we can understand that. But along with these faith-based organizations, we have a number of pro-life organizations. We have two of them upstairs, Human Life Alliance and MCCL, which is our Right to Life in Minnesota. They're part of this, along with a whole numerous amounts of others. And the most important, because I don't want to minimize these folks, doctors, nurses, hospice care workers, people that work in the medical field that understand the significance of life. And there's a, you know, fights going on right now in the medical organizations to try to neutralize their position. So they'll be neither, it's an offer in the church, neither for nor against. And we're hoping that doesn't happen. So we're trying to get a hold of, you know, doctors on these medical boards and fight the good fight, because once if we lose the support of the medical organization, it becomes more difficult, but still not impossible. I'm going to share one more video from Maggie, because she just was so eloquent in her final days and makes perfect sense. And it's the message to all of us. If we have bills that come to our states, here's what she has to say.
My name is Maggie Carner, and I was diagnosed with the same type of brain cancer as Brittany Maynard. When I was diagnosed, my doctor made sure I knew the general definition of glioblastoma, the high reoccurrence rate, and low survivability data. He explained to me that there is currently no cure for this aggressive form of cancer, and that it is a terminal diagnosis. But he told me to get busy and do the things now that I enjoy or that are meaningful to me. And thankfully, my doctor refuses to this day to speculate or give me a timeline on purpose, because he knows I'm an individual and every patient and every situation is different, and every person deserves the right to fight. Look, I know Brittany's videos were tragic and we all felt so sad watching them, but I know what Brittany faced, and honestly, suicide wasn't necessary. In fact, what really concerns me is that Brittany's suicide puts other patients like me at risk. Because the question of physician-assisted suicide isn't about me, it isn't about people with terminal illnesses, or any other individual patient. In reality, it ends up being about all of us. Please do not vote for this bill. You know what kind of a world we live in today. It's inevitable that vulnerable people will die without their consent through mistakes and abuse. No so-called safeguard can prevent this from happening. Voting for this bill is like putting fire in a paper bag, and it can't be contained. This bill puts patients like me at risk by opening the door to influence vulnerable people to commit suicide with state approval. Don't let the emotions of dying experienced by some overshadow the value of living for the rest of us. Please understand that the suicide of one patient doesn't end just there. It flows out into society and promotes the wrong idea that medical care is an overdose of suicide pills. There are better ways to shape public policy in order to care compassionately for those who are nearing death. Helping people die well shouldn't require changing the law so that other people are put at risk. So please remember patients like me who don't want to commit suicide, but instead want our right to live out our days without the risk of abuse or the subtle pressure to comply with state-sanctioned suicide.
So there's the message. Let's speak out and let's talk about it. I wanted to just say one more thing. The coalition that we've started, Minnesotans Alliance for Ethical Healthcare, the word is for. It's not against. We're not here to talk about we're against it. We certainly are against physician-assisted suicide. But what we are for is better palliative care, better hospice care, better research to help people in their end days that they would not have to suffer. And so we want to be for that. And our coalition is going to work hard to overshadow any bills that would be out there that would try to, you know, legalize. And so that's the world we live in and where we are. I wanted to just tell one more story when we, because this is a very personal thing and I forgot to tell it. I'm sorry. If you are suffering from an illness that if not treated within 6 months, you qualify in those other states for physician-assisted suicide. Well, my mother was a diabetic. And if she didn't have her insulin every day, she wouldn't be with us for a very long time. She passed away a number of years ago, but for the last 20 years of her life, she suffered immensely. She had kidney failure on dialysis 4 days a week. She went blind. She lost a leg through amputation. And she was, you know, had high doses of painkillers and everything else under the sun. And probably on an average of 2 to 3 times a year, she was in the hospital for something. Some sort of infection, some sort of anything. But after 20 years of going through this, and we went through it as a family, went over to see her 2 o'clock in the morning, Dad would call and say, she's really in severe pain, can you come over and sit with us? So she was in the hospital one time, and I came in, and she was in a room with some other lady, and she said, come on in here. She couldn't wait for me to get there. And she said, I want to tell you something. That lady doesn't know the Lord, and I witnessed to her today. And we sat and talked about that for quite a while until the lady came back and we had a nice chat. And it was pretty evident that all these years of suffering led to this one moment. And that made it all worthwhile. And so just keep that in mind. We're so consumed with, we don't want people to suffer. And she surely had an example of one that did that. But there is hope. And she had such joy in her heart that day that she could share that message of salvation through Jesus to this lady that didn't know him. So, praise
God. We also in Iowa have the Iowa Coalition for Ethical Care, and I'm sure in your states there's probably something similar as well. So, you know, if this is something important to you, seek that out. Seek out those opportunities. And it's interesting because I'm also on a group called Personhood Iowa that deals with beginning of life. And there are people who could not possibly sit in the same room together in that Personhood Iowa group who are working together hand in hand, side by side, absolutely lockstep in agreement with end of life. And so Don't let any preconceived notions about who's going to work together influence your decision to get involved in this. It's wonderful. You know, some of my best friends now are the Catholic folks, and the Anglicans are wonderful, and it's great. Just get involved in these groups, and you know, there's the right hand and the left hand kingdom, and we are absolutely in agreement on life issues and on this left-hand kingdom thing, and we can work together on these things. So our prayer as we conclude this portion, our prayer is that together we can stand for the value and dignity of all human life, from the youngest to the oldest, the preborn to the elderly, the weakest to the strongest. Jesus said, I say it to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, you did it to me. And so I guess with that, we have about 15 minutes now for question and answer. So if you have any questions, yes, ma'am.
I have a nephew who's really, really suffering with all kinds of health problems. And he goes to his doctor, and they will tune up his condition. Can be shown that his spine is deteriorating from an accident he recently had. They will not give him any more kind of relief from his pain. Doctor won't give him anything more, and they're very few painful clinics where he can go. There's one in St. Paul, and it's taken weeks. Meanwhile, he can't work. This leads to depression. This leads to, I want to end my life.
Right.
And so I think we need to work on that kind of stuff too.
And that's one of the major thrusts of these organizations is when, that's an excellent point. Good opportunity to bring this up, because when a physician-assisted suicide law is passed, that completely wipes out any need to do any further research on pain alleviation, on palliative care, because the easy solution is just completely end any kind of pain. And so by keeping that option open, or by not having the option of physician-assisted suicide, the emphasis then is on further palliative care.
I also have a sister who lived with a gun underneath her bed who at any point would be taking her life.
Oh my. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say that, you know, we have people, the suicide prevention organization, that works hard to stop suicide. And yet we turn around and want to act like it should be something that we take as a natural thing. There's work to be done. And one of the things that we talk about in our coalition, Reverend Hinz is co-chair of our coalition, so if he wants to join in and say anything, you feel free to do that. But that's why this group has focused on better care. We need better care to avoid the pain that you're suffering and that people suffer. And not that we'll totally remove it isn't probably ever going to hit that point, but to reduce it and make it more palatable. And so instead of focus on a bill that will just take death and put an end to it all, let's focus on making things better.
One more comment. I was a third grade teacher and I was a very fine Christian young boy in my class. He loved Jesus so much that he couldn't deal with the world at age 18. He said, I want to go home with Jesus. He's his wife.
Yeah.
So we have to emphasize also that life is good, even for the 18-year-old.
Yes, right. There is no age to suicide. It happens at all ages.
Well, and speaking as a pastor, I guess I would encourage then also any pastors in the room to talk about this and the importance of talking about suicide and mental illness and developmental disabilities and all those kinds of things and the value of life. Sanctity of human life, it should not be a January 20th topic. It needs to be pervasive, and there are so many different ways that you can bring that up throughout the entire lectionary or throughout the entire year. Other, yes ma'am, in back.
One of the issues that we need to be aware of is as the opioid crisis in the United States gets more and more and more focused, those of us in the healthcare industry also know that there's more and more focus not to provide painkillers because of that opioid crisis. And that is being used then as another form to kind of push forward then, well, if we can't provide opioids to take care of their pain, then really what we need to do is go over here.
Right.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Good point.
So you hear that in the news all the time. Yep. Is an opioid crisis,
yes,
but
correct.
There are also other ways to address and deal with pain that are beyond just opioids.
And the one thing that we haven't brought up, and that's insurance, who dictates a lot of how you're going to care for sick people. And so there's a lot to be done. I mean, the answer is not here other than to understand that the Lord's view is simple. If we question that we want to do the right thing, God loves life. Don't do things that would enhance death. And a bottle of pills, and I don't know if I mentioned, you have to take 90 of them, you can't just take one. And maybe that'll change. I don't know, we'll probably get one in the future, but right now it's 90 pills, that's how much it takes. But we need to do more, and it needs to be ethical health care. And that's the focus here that we're working on, as is Iowa and a number of other states around the country.
Beth had a question.
And more of a comment, actually. I was just thinking about the word compassion, which really means to come alongside someone who's hurting. And that really is our focus on life issues. I mean, people are going to suffer, have suffered in the past, will suffer in the future. And sometimes there will be options to address their suffering, and sometimes there won't be. But the total answer would be for us as Christians alongside and then bear the love of Jesus with
them. As our verse from Corinthians earlier, 1 Corinthians. Being alongside them would be to help provide better, and so that we could be there and help as best we can as human beings, and we're being moved over to the microphone, and all that will be on there now, right? Good. But needless to say, you're absolutely right. We need to share compassion. But that's why that other group called Compassion and Choices took the wrong name. They do believe that they're doing the right thing. They do believe in death with dignity. There is no death with dignity by taking your own life. And so they stole the name, so they have it. And, you know, I got to tell you in all honesty, so at that hearing that we talked about going to earlier this year, I happened to have, I wrote an article about it in Life Dates. You may have read it. But I stood next to a doctor and a lady from a Lutheran church in the Twin Cities. And the doctor told, I asked him, I introduced myself, I said, why are you here? Because they represented Compassion and Choices, which we all recognize because they all wear yellow t-shirts. And so we wore red that day, so we weren't innocent in that regard. But we made our point. And the point of it is, I said to the doctor, well, I didn't know he was a doctor. He introduced himself as a retired internist from the Twin Cities. He said, I know that I have over-medicated patients over my years, and I just want it to be legal. And I thought to myself, well, you want to clear your conscience. Is that what it is? But needless to say, and maybe it was innocent that he over-medicated. But that's not a reason to legalize others taking their life. The lady was a different situation. She said she was in her final term of leukemia. She walked with a cane. She seemed to be a little uncomfortable. But she was still there. She was still moving around and seemed to be okay to me. And it was kind of interesting. She said, I just want the bottle of pills on my shelf so that at the end I have a choice. And again, I was thinking to myself, that's your comfort? Where is the Lord in this picture? And then she said to me at the end, but don't tell my pastor I'm here. Yes.
I just dealt with my mother dying in July, and this was a year-long process. And I guess one thing that really hit me was the medical profession, the funeral home, the cemetery, you know, all these people I had to deal with were basically not Christian, not spiritual, and had a lot of issues that I couldn't believe some of the things they suggested being done. You talk about over-medication. Until my mother went on hospice, she had a single space, 1.5 page of medication that she was being prescribed and being asked to take 5 times a day. I had to get multiple those pill boxes with all the, and I finally just said, I said, yo, I said, is all of this necessary? Really?
Yeah, I guess I don't. We don't have the answer to that one. I'm sure it would.
Well, we knew where she was headed.
Yes,
and
sure.
And finally, when she went on hospice, then they said, well, we're just going to basically wipe those out. Because they were not, things were, her body was shutting down organ by organ, and they were not going to. But the key was the spirituality.
Yes. It is, you know, we do want to walk side by side with people that share our faith. You know, we didn't talk about it here today, but we talk about that you're told you should have a living will. But you should have a living will with power of attorney for health care. If you don't have that, the Wisconsin Synod does a wonderful job, and we have a link to their site on our website that has their version of a living will for power of attorney for health care directives. That you should all get a copy of it if you don't have it, because otherwise the doctor's going to make the decision. And if, and their interpretation of the previous living will. So you need someone that understands your beliefs, that is willing to implement those beliefs at when those decisions come at life's end. But you also should, like I said earlier, find doctors that are Christians that believe as
and
you do.
Even if you have that, you will be challenged almost at every
turn. It's probably true, yep. Yeah. Stand by your beliefs, absolutely.
We have a question over here.
We need to get the gospel out.
Yes.
I was in Cross Lake, Manitoba, Canada. They had 140 suicide attempts and 7 deaths there in 2 months. And the school said, Trinity Lutheran Village, Montana, please come. And they got the Bibles in the school, prayed to them, spent 4 days there. We came back with another 800 Bibles in July for VBS. It doesn't solve all the problem, but the gospel is the answer, and we have to get Christ out to the people that are hurting so badly.
Thank you. You just gave our mission statement. Yes.
Do you have any comments on hospital ethics committees? I am very, I don't know if suspicious is the right word, but I'm a little uneasy with.
It'll really depend on the area. I at our last Iowa Coalition for Ethical Care committee meeting, we have the person who is the chair of the Iowa Hospital Association, and she had just finished that morning an 18-month process of their writing a statement on end of life, and they came out strictly opposed to physician-assisted suicide, and so. Yeah, you really have to be careful, and the time to lobby is before those decisions get made.
And my concern, I guess, is that I've read quite a few cases, and I've where there's the family wants the life-sustaining treatment, the hospital, whoever, doesn't want it, and so there's a big battle.
But if you have your end-of-life directives for health care assigned to a family member, they can overrule those other folks.
I do, but my concern is I'm just wondering about hospital ethics committees get called in these cases. And do they have any basis? Do they have any ethical base? Or are these people just trying to, like this gentleman was saying,
their ethical base? Remember, it's not always based in Christianity.
I realize that.
So their ethical base is a secular ethics, which is very different than what you and I would necessarily consider to be ethical. And so, you know, I've worked in many hospital facilities across the country. Some of them have been Catholic-based organizations, and some of them have not been. And both of those then look at those ethical questions in a very different way.
You just have to have
you
need to have people there talking on your behalf if you're unable to, and certainly speak up if you are able to. It's just going to come to that. We have to speak.
And as Virginia mentioned before, the important thing, like the American Medical Association, the Minnesota Medical Association, lobbying them or encouraging them strongly not to go neutral or in favor of, but to stay against physician-assisted suicide. Then they have some place to go back to.
And yes. Help me with that ethical question, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. Durable power of attorney is absolutely essential.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We have.
And to make sure that not you, that you know you have it,
right,
but that your family and your physicians and, you know, tattoo it across your forehead and have a durable power of attorney, because that then becomes a binding document that
we have done that, and we have used the LFL Wells, which is excellent.
It's one of the best things out there. I'd say go get it. It's on our website
if
you need it.
And it's tailored to your state.
Yeah. Okay, Renee.
One more.
I have a question. What do you recommend we say to our legislators? I mean, is there, you know?
I do not support physician-assisted suicide. Do not vote for that.
And that's it.
That's it. Tell them. Point. I mean, you can give them your reasons. You give them your reasons why.
That's what I was
wondering. But it does. It definitely, they need to know you're not going to support it. You're not going to support them if they support it. They don't like that. Votes. You know, it's an issue.
And unfortunately, a lot of times you're better off using a secular argument with the legislators, because they need to be able to argue from that viewpoint. And so Virginia had some wonderful points about the flaws of the Oregon law, which is basically what's used as the basis for all these others. So emphasizing those points is important. So thank you, everyone. At 2:30, you get a real treat. You get to hear Gene Garten speaking to us all at 2:30 upstairs where we had lunch and everything. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you.